Welcome to the Punk Rock MBA podcast.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty. This is the Punk Rock MBA podcast. Today's guest is Gucci Highwaters. You may know him as one of the quote-unquote emo rappers that Epitaph signed about a year or so ago. I don't love the term emo rap for him, but you get the idea. That's what people say, so that's what I'm going to say too. Anyway, I was really excited to have him on. He's kind of a, reclusive, maybe not the right word, but you know, he's a very reserved, shy person. But maybe that's why I find him so interesting, because I talk to a lot of people who listen to the things I say in videos about marketing yourself, and they kind of feel like, well, if you're telling me that I need to be an extroverted, loud person on social media, that's just not who I am. Are you telling me that I'm just fucked, that I can't, you know, market myself in 2021? And the answer is no, and he's proof of that. He's got over a million listeners on Spotify. He's on Epitaph. He's like crushing it. And as you'll find out from this conversation, and if you look at his social media, super reserved, quiet guy. So that is kind of the main angle for this here. But just in general, you know, lots of good insights about being a DIY creator. And we get into all that stuff. Very excited for this one. But before we get into that, wanted to mention a couple things you can do to support the show if you would like to. Number one, share it on social media. Tag me, tag the guest. It does a lot to help us spread the word. Number two, you can pick up some merch if you want. I've got mugs now. I came out with a new like deathcore shirt that's pretty cool. There's a link to that in the show notes. And number three, you can support us on Patreon if you would like. If you really, really like us, patrons get every podcast a week early. There's a members-only private Discord. There's a way to have me review your music or art or podcast or anything else that you might want to send my way. We really appreciate that. That is actually what pays for this show, because I actually lose a lot of money on it. It is because of the patrons that were able to do it. So thank you very much for your support. But first, before we get into that, let's do a little bit of Q&A. From Watchloaf, looking at becoming an entrepreneur. Any advice? I make Android apps, but I'm trying to figure out how to make a passive income for my skill set, or at least maybe do a startup or something. All right, so there are a few questions here. Basically, what you're trying to do is make a little bit of money, ideally in a passive way, if you can. So if you make Android apps, well, that seems like the obvious way to do it to me. I mean, if you already know how to make apps, then make apps. Why reinvent the wheel, and why learn a new skill set if you don't have to? Now, as far as how to monetize an Android app, that's a question I don't know the answer to. I know a little bit about iOS apps, but not even that much. Android apps have some significant differences, so I couldn't tell you the answer to that. But the good thing is all that information is out there, and I don't want to sound shitty, but honestly, the way to start with pretty much any question like this is Google. So, you know, just Google for how to monetize Android apps, and I guarantee you that there are dozens and dozens of great blog articles and YouTube videos and Reddit and Quora discussions that will have all the answers to this. And there's no plan that anybody can hand you on a silver platter that is going to like guaranteed to be successful on day one or anything like that. You're going to have to try shit, experiment, and it's going to take a while before it clicks probably. But any question like this that you can possibly think of, the answer is out there, and it is probably free or cheap. So that's the cool thing. I would just start Googling. The other thing I would say is there's really no such thing as truly passive income, unless you're talking about things like, you know, treasury bonds and stuff like that, which are more or less passive, but, you know, have such a low return that unless you have like literally $1 billion, it's not going to add up to much money. So think of it as passive-ish. You're going to have to do some work to kind of maintain this. Like with my merch, for example, I actively promote that a little bit, but not that much. And, you know, every day I sell 10 or 20 or 50 or sometimes $100 worth of merch. And that happens while I sleep. And so in one sense, it's passive, but I do put some time into promoting it and stuff like that. You're going to have to do the same thing with an app. I think the idea that truly passive income is out there is not really correct. So just understand that you will still need to put some time into managing it. And with that out of the way, let's get into this episode. Morgan, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for making time.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for having me on. Been following you for a while now, so it's always dope to kind of hop on, do some stuff with people that I really enjoy their content. So yeah, thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. It always makes me really happy when there's people like from your generation that follow my stuff, because I don't want to just talk to other old people. It's important to me that everybody, you know, feels included. So it always makes me really happy to see that.
Yeah, dude. I mean, obviously I got signed to Epitaph maybe a little over a year ago, and that's kind of when I discovered your stuff. You're kind of one of the dudes that was really hyped about, you know, them signing some, you know, kind of new stuff. So that's really like how I discovered you, which is, you know, a great way to discover someone just supporting the art.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about the Epitaph thing for sure. But for anybody who may not be familiar, you've only been making music for what, like 4 or 5 years now or something?
Probably 5 years soon.
Which, I mean, it's crazy to me that there's people, you know, your age that have still been making music for 5 years, and you're almost kind of like the second generation of, I mean, I'll call it alternative rap. I don't know what, there's like no good label for it, but you know, from what I understand, you're kind of a product of like Bones and Lean and, you know, Blade and that kind of thing. Those are your influences, and so you're the second generation of that.
Yeah, 100%. I'm definitely like a second generation. Like, I'm 22 now, and the genre kind of has, some people are like almost 30 years old, so.
Might as well be dead. 1 foot in the grave.
Nah, yeah, I'm definitely like a younger dude, and I came up a little later. Like, I wasn't like the first one on it or anything. So yeah, I definitely have kind of a different story to, you know, some of the, you know, couple of years older people.
Yeah, you know, so many of the people I talked to were like, oh, well, you know, I grew up listening to, you know, From First to Last or whatever, and then I started doing this stuff. And you know, you like you said, you have a little bit of a different story, isn't it? You are kind of a product of the scene that those people created, and so I think that's kind of interesting. I'm interested to hear kind of how that, I don't know, how that colors your perspective on things.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I think the most apparent thing is just me not understanding when people are talking about how legendary this band is or this thing. I'm like always lost, and it's funny because, you know, most people assume that, oh, this kid makes, you know, like emo rap. He definitely grew up on pop punk or whatever it is. And, you know, that's safe to assume because most people, you know, are familiar with these bands and, you know, cultural things. But I feel like the most apparent thing is just I miss out on like conversations with people saying, yo, I love this band so much. Right. Like, remember this?
Was Young Lean like your Blink 182?
Well, the weird thing is, like, when I discovered Young Lean, I want to say I was like 16, 17. So I wasn't really that young.
Yeah.
You know, I was like late teen. Really, my upbringing, like my pop punk was just rap music. Like,
got it.
That's really it. Like, it's not that I grew up in like a totally different time. It was just like a few years. I mean, even some kids my age, like, grew up on pop punk stuff. I think I don't think it's the age thing that made me miss out. It was just like my preference, because one of my best friends I grew up with, he was so into rock music and pop punk, like that's all he listened to. But he liked rap too, and I liked a couple of things that he would show me, like Hollywood Undead and stuff. It was just rap for me, just preference, like I liked it more.
It took me a long time to realize that most people in like the rock scene didn't care or know about rap, because I always listened to rap as much as I listened to rock. I listened to rap before I knew what punk was or anything like that, and I just sort of assumed that everybody in rock listened to at least or knew who like Young Jock was or something. They had no clue, and not that I'm saying like, oh, they don't know, but just it's interesting to me that even now, with as much crossover as there is between the two genres, it's still like rock people still don't listen to mainstream rap like at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like taking a turn, because like if you think about it, if you're a rock fan, right, and you turn on the radio and you hear a rap song, it's not going to be a great rap song, most likely, you know.
Right.
It's going to be something
gonna be
that's
Flo Rida or something.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be like, you know, not that any of that stuff is bad, but it's radio rap, you know. It's totally different. So I think maybe just the surface level is what turns people off of it.
Right.
And yeah, that's what I think, but, you know.
Well, so it's interesting to me that you ended up on Epitaph, which I don't know. I mean, I imagine at this point you're sort of familiar with their stature in the scene. But I mean, like, on arguably the most like iconic punk label of all time.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, Brett is just a fucking legend. You know, that I think it's pretty cool that they you know, wanted to work with you and felt like you belonged on the label even without coming from the punk scene and vice versa.
Yeah, it's awesome. It wasn't even a question, you know. It's like they said, what's up to me at a show, actually, at one of my first shows. They just came through and they said, what's up? Like, we're from Epitaph, this and that. Just kind of like chilled with me, really. Yeah, over when I lived in LA, I kind of would meet up with him every once in a while. And yeah, it was never like, oh, like, did you grow up on this music or whatever? It was just like, we love your stuff. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter anything else. It's just like, we love your stuff. And like, I think you'd fit on this because you're DIY. You like, you know, it's like, I don't know, your music's so different, but you're not that different to people that make punk. You know, you do it out of your bedroom. You did like shitty shows, you know, in front of 20 people. So, you know, it's not so different.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the way I see it, although I'm sure you've seen some of the comments on their stuff. Their older fans definitely are not excited about you guys being on the label. But, you know, I think that's a big credit to Brett that he's willing to take those risks and, you know, piss off their fans to, you know, support artists that he believes in.
Yeah, that's happened to me my whole life. Like, not everyone's going to be on board with what you're doing. Like, everyone has opinions and it's like, who cares? I mean, like, they can like what they like and shit, and they can hate on whatever. But at the end of the day, like, music moves on. Like, think about 10 years from now, like, it's going to be completely different, and it just, it changes, and you just, you know, maybe you won't like it or whatever, but you know, the old music's always there for you.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels like 2020 was like a big breakout year for you. Like, I hadn't looked at your Spotify numbers in a while, and I looked recently and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, well, I just dropped an album called Jokes on You about 2 months ago now. That was awesome. That really like kind of opened some new doors for me, which I'm really hyped about. But 2020 was weird because I didn't drop that much music, and I was like kind of in a weird place. I feel like mentally it was like I didn't get anywhere. But you know, I think if you kind of round up all the moments in the year, I definitely like. Was staying there. I think like maybe 2019 was like more of an impactful year for me. Maybe. I don't know though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just wondering if there was some sort of big moment that I missed or something.
Not really. It's weird. I feel like 2020, I stayed consistent. Luckily, cause I didn't really drop that much stuff, but I definitely didn't go down. I think I stayed consistent. Maybe my plays like went up a little bit or whatever, kind of fluctuated a bit, but the album dropping was definitely something that boosted, you know, my numbers and whatever, my relevancy, I guess. I don't know.
How different was it working with Epitaph on an album release versus the other stuff that you did that was all DIY?
So this is technically like my debut album because I have an album. My other album is titled Post Death. And all that is just a collection of my first singles. So I didn't make it as an album at all. When it was done, I just compiled it all into an album. So this was like my first experience. I don't really have anything to compare to, but there's a lot more thought out, which is cool. You know, it was kind of fun to spend more time on something and really think about it, you know, make a song and sit on it for a month and maybe change a few things. Which I never used to do that. You know, I used to just throw it up the next day.
Which is cool too.
Which is awesome. Yeah. But I like it. I like challenges. I like a change of pace. I don't have anything to compare it to, but I think overall, it was just a little more calculated, which is awesome. You know, kind of makes it feel a little more special and like this is a little more serious now. Like, so I like it. I like the challenge and it was really fun. I'm ready for the next album.
The production on it also sounds a little slicker to me. Not like a huge difference, but just like, all right, like especially like the vocals, the, you know, the vocal mixing and stuff. Did you do anything differently there?
No, I didn't want to stray too far from what I've done because I feel like I didn't really have a chance to kind of show off like my, I don't know, it's kind of weird. What I see like for my back catalog is just me developing because it's all my first songs, you know, like I'm only 4 years into singing, so I have a lot of growth still. So I feel like this album, I wanted to just be like, all right, I don't want to do anything like crazy new. I just want to kind of perfect what I've been doing and kind of like push the limit on that. And then that's going to be my debut album, you know?
Yeah. Like if you listen to that album, it sounds the same, you know, or should I say consistent with your first stuff, just better.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really, that was my goal. So I'm happy you kind of, you noticed that. But yeah, this album definitely wasn't something that I wanted to kind of push the boundaries with. I kind of just wanted to give them like a staple Gucci album and hope that all the fans that have stuck around really enjoy it.
Yeah. I wanted to mention or talk about the vocals, because you said that you, I saw some other interview, you said that you never really even tried singing before you started putting out music, which surprised me because I think your vocal melodies are very good and pretty sophisticated. It sounds to me like the reference point for those would be like mainstream kind of R&B, almost like Post Malone or Black Bear or something like that. Where did that come from if you're so new to singing?
Actually, growing up, my mom always had the radio on, and it was kind of like a thing. My sister, she's an amazing singer, and growing up, she was like always the one to be singing, and like everyone was like, her voice is amazing. Even as a kid, when she was like, you know, 12 years old, she was doing like the school plays, and she would be the lead singer in every school play every year. So it's funny to think that I'm the singer now. It's always been there. I've always been a very shy kid. I think back then, maybe subconsciously, I always wanted to try it, and it was always there. You know, my sister was always singing. I would watch X Factor with her. And we would, you know, we would listen to radio music and just like, you know, Rihanna and Lady Gaga and shit like that. So it's always been there, but I just never exercised it until, you know, I started producing beats on my own. So
it's almost like you mentally understood singing. You just hadn't physically really done it very much.
Yeah, 100%. I always listened to music as a kid, and I never just listened to it surface level. I always thought about it like, oh my God, this part sounds so cool. You know, and kind of, yeah, mentally always was a very detailed listener.
Right. That is like so underrated as a way of getting better at music, is just like being a detailed listener. A friend of mine who went to Berkeley and is like a super amazing musician taught me like how to make like charts of songs. He'd say, well, just take a song you listen to or you like, listen to it and make a note of how the arrangement changes like on a bar by bar basis. And I did that. It made me literally 10 times better at writing in like 2 weeks just from dissecting stuff.
It's crazy. And it's such a nerdy way to be, but it's so awesome. Like when I was in high school, I did a video class, and my teacher said, when I teach you this, you know, the basics about, you know, filming or whatever, you'll never watch a movie the same ever again.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's interesting. And you know, he told us this is where your, you know, portrait shot should be or whatever like that. The rule of thirds, just told us some really basic like camera things. And then, you know, I'm watching a movie and I'm like, did you see that? Did you see the little thing? And that's like the same with music. Like when I started making beats, I was like, ooh, like that kick sounds so good. Like I end on that kick or whatever. And yeah, that's what it is. Once you kind of start to understand more, you really get like super nerdy about it. And yeah, I loved it. And I feel like I always had that mind, even though I didn't understand the actual things going on.
You know, learning to listen to music like that and learning about production. So like I'm a partner in a company that like teaches music production. We have like 6,000 members. It's mostly like rock and metal kind of stuff. But because of that, I'm not a fantastic producer, but for the past 7 or 8 years, I've been like just balls deep and talking about production all day, every day. So I understand it pretty well. And it's interesting that it's like made me not like some stuff that I used to like, but on the other hand, made me really love some stuff that I kind of disregarded before.
Yeah. I totally relate to that too. And what's funny about it is I'll love a song and then I'll understand, you know, how it was made or listen to its flaws, but I never want to put that above just like the artistry and me liking it.
And the feel. Yeah. At the end of the day, if it makes you feel good, that's all that matters.
Yeah. 100%. And I think that's what's like so beautiful about music. You can, you know, listen to a song with just like a kick and a snare or whatever, and like you love it, but it's not the most complicated thing ever. It's just like they knew what they're doing on a different level than just whatever it is, you know? So, yeah.
It made me really, in particular, appreciate singing. I think until you have tried singing or recording or mixing vocals and stuff, you don't understand how good pop vocalists are. Like, people maybe take it for granted. But, like, you can go on YouTube and listen to Whitney Houston, like, raw soloed vocals. And it just makes me want to cry that she's so fucking good, you know, and this is from like, she's like 19, it's in like 1984 or something like that. It really made me appreciate pop in particular to learn more about production.
Yeah, 100%. Probably when I was like 15, 16 and I was into like, you know, real rap or whatever, like really sophisticated type stuff. I hated pop and I hated this and I hated that. But there's like, you know, there's like skills in mostly every genre, you know, like there's
any genre, there's something you can learn from it.
Exactly. And there's always something admirable about, you know, pop or country even, or, you know, stuff that people hate. Like there's always something in there that's like, that's impressive and you can't lie about it. So yeah, I've definitely opened up to, I don't think there's a genre that like I hate, you know, I feel like that word is like, it sucks. Like, you know, there's something I can listen to and I don't enjoy it, but like,
yeah,
that's pretty impressive or whatever. Like there's things that like people will brush off, but yeah, there's some really impressive things about every genre. Yeah.
How do you feel about country being, you're probably like the least country person that I've talked to since you're from Ireland and Long Island. How do you feel about country?
I think it's sick. I think it's very emotional. I mean, I'm not going to be the, I don't know like anything really about country, but it's so funny to me because it's like, if I was like born and raised in the countryside in America, like I would probably make that stuff.
Sure.
Because I make like emotional music and whatever, and country is emotional. It's just like they grew up listening to, you know, country guys playing guitars, and I listened to, you know, rappers over hip hop beats, and I'm making emotional stuff over hip hop beats, but they're making emotional stuff over guitar. Like it's like,
it's the same thing. Just, it's just a different style.
Same thing, different style. And yeah, that's, I love it. I think it's cool.
What do Irish country people listen to? I feel like they just listen to Eminem, but I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're so right. Like, it's so like, I guess underdeveloped is like the best way to say it. Like, I mean, people in like, I grew up actually in like pretty secluded, like, I didn't grow up in a city in Ireland. I grew up in like a field. Like I look out and there's just fields. I grew up like in a secluded area, but we weren't a country Irish family. Like my parents grew up in Ireland, but they lived in America for like, you know, 20 years or whatever. So they weren't totally just like country, but yeah, we grew up there and like, they're just farmers. I don't even think they listen to music. Like,
right.
If anything, they'll like listen to like traditional Irish music. They probably don't listen to radio and stuff.
Right. Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMNS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
We're going to be like Chicago's.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMNS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where There's the video in the background in the player, and when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like, I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode. So one of the things that is different, even in the relatively short amount of time you've been making music, is you kind of came up when SoundCloud was at its peak. And I'm not as plugged into SoundCloud as you probably are, but it seems like it's not kind of what it used to be. How different is that versus when you came out? It just seems like that's where all the innovation was happening back then. And there's still lots of cool stuff on there, but it's just not quite, I don't know, top of the food chain like it was back then. Or maybe I'm wrong, I don't know.
No, you're right, you're totally right. And it's actually crazy because it's not as thriving as it used to be. I haven't used it actively in like 2 years. Like, literally, I don't go on SoundCloud. I'm not even logged in probably on this computer. Like, I don't go on it because either whatever happened, there was like a shift. Maybe I think it is doing well right now with hyperpop stuff.
Yeah,
but that's kind of the only thing I can really think of, and I still don't even know what the current climate is with it. But I think it's doing, I want to think it's doing better than I think it is, you know, because like,
totally, because you're not part of it anymore, really,
right? So the emo rap type of wave, like, that's, there's like, I don't think there's anything going on SoundCloud right now that's like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. I feel like that wave kind of did die out or whatever, but I mean, that's what happens. You know, stuff doesn't stick around for forever.
I'm sure there's a lot of cool stuff on there, like you said, especially hyperpop, but I just don't have the time or energy to like dig through everything. So I just figure like the best stuff I'm going to hear about and see it on YouTube or Spotify, and I'm just going to wait until it hits. I don't need, you know, when I was younger, it's like I wanted to hear about everything the second it dropped, and I just can't do that anymore.
Yeah, I don't do that either anymore. I think back then when I used to do that, you know, click every track, who's this, who's that, like, when I was really involved in it, it's because I was so new to it and it was so fresh and I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. But like after years of knowing that there's thousands and thousands of kids out there making stuff. And I also feel like it got very, very oversaturated too. Like, I don't want to say most kids, but like a lot more kids are making stuff in their bedroom. Like 5 years ago, they weren't, you know. I feel like, I don't know, maybe that's just like in my head, but I feel like a lot of people.
No, it's more and more every year for sure. I mean,
yeah,
because we've had our company for 7 years now, and I did some other stuff. I've been doing it since 2013, and the amount of bedroom producers is way higher every year, definitely.
Okay, yeah, good to know, because maybe sometimes I think shit is all in my head.
No, you're right, and I think it's awesome. I mean, there's something like everyone's putting out shit on sound good, even if it sucks. Like, I'm still glad they're doing it.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's what made me kind of go, I guess, like, I didn't have time to see all the new stuff, and there's so much new stuff that I should have had more time, but I had less time. And it is cool that there's more. It's awesome, you know.
Partly why I read all my DMs and stuff too is because I know that people will send me the stuff that I need to see.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's cool too.
I just kind of rely on other people to, in my comments, I just rely on other people to filter it for me, which is cool that they do that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
So you said in some other interview that I was listening to that there was a point where you kind of realized like, oh, I can live off of, you know, I guess streaming income. That's pretty cool. When did that happen? And like, how many followers did you have at that time?
So I don't exactly know, like, when, but I know that there was a time in my life where I was working at this graphic design office at the same time I was going to school. I was going to community college for graphic design, but when I would go home, the only thing I cared about was like making music. So I probably had somewhere near 10,000 followers on SoundCloud and maybe like 20,000 monthly listeners, right, on Spotify. But I was still working my job because I didn't think it would get any bigger. I was just having fun. I was just loving it. And then I got like my grades from college and I failed every single class. Literally, I failed every class.
All right. Well, I guess the school thing's not working out.
Right. So it was so weird though, because like I was actually really good at like graphic design and stuff. I found it quite easy, but I just didn't do any homeworks and I got 100% score on my midterm, but I just didn't do any homework, so I failed. Like it's right. Just like, I don't know. I mean, it's my fault because I was just making music, but when I failed that, I was like, all right, let me see how much money I'm actually like really making and like count it up. And I was like, shit, I probably could live off this.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
And I mean, 20,000, that's definitely respectable, but that's not massive.
Right. It wasn't. The thing is, I still lived with my parents at this time. I was probably 18 and they were like, yeah, you can stay in the house. You're going to college. Like, of course. But as soon as I dropped out, and that's the thing, I wasn't making enough to pay rent by myself. When I say by myself, like I was probably making like $1,000 a month.
All right. I mean, that's something.
I was also selling features and beats. So it was like, it wasn't just strictly plays. I don't know exactly when and how many listeners I had when like I started making like a healthy amount. It kind of like came like that, honestly, before I knew it.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because there's so many people like in rock that have this idea that you can't make any money off, you know, music other than playing shows and selling merch, and you know, SoundCloud is bullshit and streaming is bullshit and blah blah blah. And I know so many fucking people like you who make a living off of streaming, and it's like, you know, you're an 18-year-old kid who's only been making music for a couple years. Are you getting rich off of streaming? No, but you know, you're being scrappy and finding different ways to like get some money together, and like $1,000 a month, like shit, when I was 18, I would have fucking killed somebody to make $1,000 a month off of music or anything else. So I just want people to understand that it is possible. You don't have to have millions of followers. Like you don't have to be on a label. Like you can just be a scrappy kid and get by doing the stuff that you're talking about.
Yeah. Now for 2021, I don't know if it's the same as it used to be because it's so oversaturated. Back then, we all made money. We were selling beats. We were selling features. We were getting some streaming money. It was all these different things. People were selling reposts like all the time.
But now there's Twitch and there's always some new way to make money if you just hustle.
100%. Yeah, there's no excuse anymore, man. Like 100%. We all made it work. And like you have to be driven. You can't just be like someone that's like, you can't do this, you can't do that. Yo, you can make money online, like no joke.
Sure. I mean, how many rappers do we know that bought a fucking house off of Spotify money that are not super popular?
You know, so many. There's so many people that we don't know that are living their best life right now, you know, just off a core fan base, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's I think to me that's the big lesson, you know, and you know, you're a very reserved person. Like this interview is more animated than you usually are. You're a very reserved person. You don't go real hard on self-promotion on social media. You don't post that often.
Yeah.
You know, you don't do a lot of the things that people think that they have to do. And yet, you know, it's obviously working for you. You're on Epitaph. I mean, I think you're such a good case study of how many of the things people, you know, believe that, you know, think that are true, but just aren't.
It's pretty funny because in this certain climate of like the music industry, it's like, how entertaining are you? It's like, that's really it on social media with
yeah,
you know, Instagram and TikTok or whatever it is.
It's like Lil Pump basically invented that model of just be a fucking loudmouth who happens to make music.
Yeah. And I think like for myself, I'm not the most interesting kid. Like I just love making music. I'm not like a loud person. I'm pretty shy. I live a pretty damn regular life. And I don't love social media that much. I kind of started to hate it. I'll still post because it's important. It's still very important for my career. Obviously, there's a sick aspect of like interacting with fans that I always love, but there's a lot of things that I don't like about it. And that's kind of why I don't post that much, you know?
You post what? Maybe once every week or two?
Yeah, I mean, I started to post much more, but in like 2020, I think I posted like 12 photos on Instagram.
Right.
I like counted it. If it were up to me, like I probably wouldn't have social media at this point. I think social media is still a good thing. It's just a lot of there's a lot of negativity and there's like a lot of pressure to be like the best person. And I don't know, there's a bunch of things, but I still use it because it's very important. And the other thing, you can't just leave your fans in the dust, you know?
Yeah.
You gotta give them some time of your day. And, you know, I'm starting to learn that. I'm starting to do that.
Tell me about that. Sounds like you're starting to post more often. What made you kind of make that decision?
To be fully honest, like my manager was like, why don't you post more? Like people are going on social media every day. Like you have to be there. And I'm like, that's so true. If I want my music to, you know, get bigger and survive, you know, I have to post more. I have to be in people's faces and I don't have to be obnoxious. I just be myself or whatever and share more of my life. But that's pretty much it. Like my manager motivated me and I have like a social media team now that just helps me, like, you know, hey, like we should do this little thing on Friday, you know, just like little things that kind of gave me like a little boost of encouragement to post more. That's pretty much it.
But it's not like you turned into Logan Paul overnight. You know, you're still low-key reserved kind of personality. So I think it's cool for anybody who feels like, oh, I have to be like this huge personality that dresses crazy and stuff. Not true.
Yeah, it's not true. It's not true. It's hard though. It's like I even get in my own head where I'm like, I'm not like gonna ever be like a popping like Instagram page. And I'm not, because it's like my Instagram isn't the best quality about me. I think my music is the best quality because I spend time on it and I, you know, I try to perfect it. So it's like, cause I see like, I don't know. I've been comparing myself a lot. I mean, I always have, you know, when you see someone on Instagram that has like 500,000 followers and you're like, yo, this person's like doing some dope shit. Like they're doing like sick content, this and that. Yeah, it's like at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. And you can just be yourself. You won't have a lot of followers like if you're just, you know, a quiet person, but people are still going to like it, you know?
Well, there's a lot of other quiet people out there like you who are tired of all the loud people, you know? Yeah. If you want to be optimized just completely for popularity, yeah, you should just be a loud idiot.
Yep.
But I don't think anybody listening to this, I don't think their goal is to be the most popular person in the world. They'd probably be happy just having like a small but dedicated fan base that supports them. And I think you're a good example of, you know, that you can do that even if you are a relatively quiet, reserved person.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, you can definitely get to this point, you know, being yourself. You don't have to sell out or do anything crazy, for sure.
Yeah. So touring, you've done some of it. I'm guessing you'll be doing more, things open up and stuff. How much touring would you like to be doing in a perfect world, since you kind of don't really need to?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with the idea that I don't actually need to, because I did tour a lot in 2019 and actually the start of 2020 before COVID hit. I think ideally, like, I would like to do like 2 tours a year just so I have enough time to make music and be like an artist and not a touring musician.
Yeah.
Because I mean, there's a lot of different elements that tie into why touring isn't like the best thing for my brand. First of all, the music isn't like with a live band and it's not like the most impressive thing. So that's kind of like the first thing. It's like, you know, it's not like the best compatibility for live. I still make it pretty good. I used to use Backtracks when my first tour. I used Backtracks because I didn't have any idea how to perform. Over like, you know, doing the next tour, I kind of added a new element and I definitely made it as cool as it could be for now. But I think, yeah, that's the first thing. I don't have a live band or whatever. Maybe someday in the future. And then the other thing is like, whatever it is about my fans is like, they're like homebodies. Like they like being at home and streaming my music. And
I can 100% imagine that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is like sad music and it's about, you know, being anxious or and being quiet and being that like, you know, to yourself type of person. And it's, you know, we're not like concert goers, you know, we're just like anxious kids. Like that's not the best environment, but there's a few things, you know, that will kind of make the touring experience not as vital as it should be for, you know, a band or something. But I think maybe like 2 tours a year, because there are like many fans that do come out and it's super fun. So yeah,
I'm like the odd man out. I don't really like going to shows. Like, I mean, obviously I've been to zillions of them and I go say hi to my friends and stuff, but like I don't find the act of watching people perform music to be all that interesting. I like listening to the music.
That's cool. Yeah, that's interesting to hear, actually. There's people that are like that, you know. There's a bunch of people that don't like going to shows. One of my homies like loves music. He hates shows. And it's just, yeah, it's an environment where you're squished up against someone and you're seeing your favorite artist. You're so sweaty.
Yeah.
It's not like the coolest environment unless you really love it.
And it's a hassle to get there, and you got to pay all this money to park and yeah. Hope your car doesn't get broken into. And it's also, I don't like loud noise,
dude.
Which might sound weird given that I listen to.
That's crazy that you said that, actually, because over the past few years of my life, I've noticed I get really, really anxious if I hear like a loud noise. And it's crazy you said that, because I feel like when I say it, I kind of sound really weird. But like if there's like a helicopter or something obnoxiously loud,
yeah,
I'll be like in panic mode.
I mean, it makes sense. Your brain, like in nature, if there's some loud noise, it's probably a fucking alligator chasing after you or something. And your brain is like, holy shit, Morgan, watch out.
Yeah, no, 100%. But there's some people that don't give a fuck. And I don't get that. But I'm very fearful of super loud noises. I fucking hate loud noises. Like a few weeks ago, I had to cut like this. I just like redid my studio. I had to cut like a metal rod. I had to cut it with like an angle grinder.
Uh-huh.
And they're so loud. And
sparks and all that.
Yeah. And like the scariest part for me was how loud it was, like the piercing sound. And that's when I realized, holy shit, like I hate loud noises.
I don't even like leaf blowers. Like if there's someone across the street with like a leaf blower, I'm like, ugh.
It sucks. We were late on that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, but you know, to your point, there's a lot of fans that love going to shows. And I think there's a lot to be said for bringing people together too. Like even if it's not about you,
yeah.
Like there's probably other fans that have been talking online and stuff and get the chance to meet each other. And that could be the place where, you know, oh, we met at a Gucci show years ago and now we're like BFFs.
Yeah, no, there's so much cool stuff to it too. Like everything else besides like the whole, like I could be in the studio part, or like live shows aren't as cool as they should be or whatever. Everything aside from that is so dope, because there are people that I've met at a show, and yeah. There's people that there's supporters that I've got to know in my Discord server that I talk to all the time, and they're like, yo, I live in Germany. Next time you're here, like, oh, let's get a drink or whatever before the show. And I'm like, let's do it. And those things are what makes touring so sick, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What I like to say is I like everything about shows except the band playing.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Yeah, and I kind of think that's what it's about. It's not, you know, if the band was just playing or whatever and there was no like social stuff and there was no, yeah, everything else would just kind of suck.
My move when I was, I was like 19 or 20 and I didn't have any money for shows, my friend and I would go ride our bikes and just stand outside the whole time.
Yeah, I've seen people do that.
Which was great, because then people come out between bands like to talk, you know, so we'd basically just go hang out with all our friends, but we didn't have to like pay to see the band or anything like that. And that was like the perfect hack, because it was like all the good parts, but none of the bad. Didn't have to worry about getting kicked in the face by somebody moshing or something. That was the best. I miss those days. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've never done that. I actually did go to a fair amount of shows when I was kind of like, I mean, I've always kind of gone to shows. Until I started playing them, but like as a teenager, I honestly loved going to shows. I just loved the music, and that's really why. But I guess like at this point, now that I'm like a little bit older, I probably wouldn't enjoy them as much, to be honest.
Yeah, but you know, this is your job, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah,
you used to kind of seem like you were self-conscious about your age, or at least you referenced it a lot, like. You know, I forget, there's a song where you talk about like being 19 and you'd said in interviews a whole bunch that you were like scared of turning 20 and stuff.
Yeah.
What I was just curious, what was that about?
That's interesting. I feel like when I was 18 and 19, and I dropped out of college and I quit my job, that it was like I was at the edge of a cliff or something, you know. I'm about to be an adult. And my parents are like, all right, you quit school, like go get like your own apartment. And that was when I started making music. And it's just it's not necessarily, oh, I'm going to be 20 in a year. It's like, oh, I'm going to have to get an apartment and like a fucking job.
I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the idea behind it. It's like growing up is actually really scary. And I definitely took a risk. Like when I quit my job and quit college, like I, you know, gave up on every other option, and I didn't know that music was going to work out. So I was very scared when I was making my first few songs, just kind of clinging to that feeling. And there was always that fear that I'm going to be old and music is going to be long gone, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think every 18 or 19 year old, like, put it this way, the 18 and 19 year olds who think they have it all figured out are the biggest idiots.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah.
Those are the ones you want to watch. Oh, dude, no, I've got this plan and this plan. You're like, all right, buddy.
Luckily, I've always been kind of, I mean, I guess it's like there's pros and cons, but I've always been very anxious and fearful of the future, but it's set me up well, so.
I have been too. I'm like kind of a natural worrier, and there's times where that's bad, like when I have panic attacks and shit, but I think in general, it's helped me more than it's hurt me, because it's like, when people say like, oh, don't worry, it's all going to work out. Like, well, how?
Yeah, no, it's true.
Like, it's not just magically going to work out because you're in a good mood.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a whole other thing, because then you realize you can't rely on other people at all. Like, people can help you for sure. But if you're a worrier and you're like someone that has like severe anxiety, like no words can help you. And you actually have you're just left to your own device.
Yeah, exactly. People say, oh, it's fine, don't worry about it. Like, well, no, I'm going to worry about it until I actually address the things that I'm worried about.
Yeah.
Which I don't think that's a bad thing.
It's not. It's actually, it's made me a very independent person, because growing up, I was the most anxious kid ever.
I don't know what part of Long Island you're from. I've spent some time there. I don't know it super well, but the company I worked for, I had an office there. You seem like the least Long Island person. I'm just thinking about your personality. People there are so fucking aggressive. Like, it just seems like your personality is so out of place there.
Yeah, no, it is true, man. It's, people are fucking loud here for sure. Yeah, the culture is just, you know, loud Americans, I guess. But that's how it's been since I moved from Ireland to America. You know, people are just, not that it's a bad thing, but, you know, Americans are definitely a louder type of person.
But especially fucking Long Island. Like, Long Island and Boston are the most like, hey, I'm walking over here.
Yeah, you know, for
the
sure.
The most aggressive people are like, dude, why are you on 10 right now?
Yeah, no, 100%. And that's just a part of what that I got used to it. You know, it's just, I've been here for maybe 8-7 years now or whatever it is. But
your parents are in Ireland though, right?
No, my parents live here.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a weird story, but just to sum it up, I was born in Long Island to two Irish parents that were working in bars, just making some money in the US. And when I was 5 years old, they moved back to where they're from in Ireland. I grew up, when I was 15, we moved back to New York.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So when I was 15, I moved back with my dad and my sister, which is half of my family. And we lived here for a year. And then my mom got her citizenship and then she came over. So it was kind of a super weird time, but we're all over here now and, you know, we're doing well. So.
Gotcha. Well, I was just asking because I've lived like all over the US. I lived in New Jersey for a year and I just fucking hated every minute of it. And you could live anywhere with your, you know, I mean, you could live anywhere and you have lived other places. Long Island to me is like not a very inspiring place. And I personally find it depressing.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious about how people's like surroundings affect what they do. What keeps you there?
Well, yeah, that's a good point, because I totally agree. Like, Long Island is flat, totally flat. It's boring. I mean, people are assholes a lot of the time. I mean,
and it's expensive too for what it is.
It's so expensive. It's New York City price. What brought me back, I think, is like I've been dating this girl for like 3 years, and she lives here. We were together before my music even popped off. I think that was a big thing for me, because 3 years isn't like just some little relationship. It's like, you know, it's getting serious for sure.
That's a good reason. Yeah.
My family also live here too. I have a younger brother, older sister. And not that any of that stuff is like I have to be around it all the time, but I think when I was in LA, I was so disconnected, and I actually didn't really have many friends that I could just hit up and be like, yo, are you trying to hang out and just chill? And I feel like I felt like super isolated and shit, even though I was surrounded by people all the time. But I really don't know what kind of makes me like this place. But just to kind of put it in a better perspective, I live in Long Beach. I literally can almost see the beach from my house. And I kind of live in a quiet part of town. So it's kind of like I do live in Long Island, but I actually live in a really nice part that isn't very like suburban, I guess.
Right. I used to go to Ronkonkoma all the time, which just sucks.
Okay. That's like super far out. I literally live like 5 minutes from Queens.
Oh, okay.
I'm definitely in Long Island, but it's not like the shitty, like suburban. Like it actually is. It's very close to the city. Like no joke, I live 5 minutes from the Far Rockaway Bridge. So
okay,
it's kind of not really like I'm not like deep in the Long Island. Like,
gotcha.
You know, so it is kind of just a nice spot, and it's actually like really popular in the summertime as like a beach town. So it, gotcha. It is kind of like a nice part, honestly.
Okay. Well, all right. Then in that case, it makes a little bit more sense to me at least.
Definitely. Yeah. You're thinking of, yeah, Ronkonkoma is like way out. Like that's like an hour and a half for me, like the other way. So
it's a shithole. Yeah. I have PTSD just thinking about it. Cool. Well, I've taken up enough of your time. I appreciate you carving out a few minutes of your Friday. Any words or wisdom or anything else you want to leave us with before I let you go?
Nothing necessarily. Just thanks for having me on. And hope anyone, you know, that listened to this enjoyed it and, you know, hopefully inspired some people to kind of get their music going and always believe in yourself. Because, you know, I'm just a kid that was driven to make this stuff. So, yeah, that's it.
Cool. I appreciate it. And I will talk to you soon.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home thinking about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan, and this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.